Welcome to our deep dive, into these 2025 trend themes. This is from Scenario DNA. And it's fascinating how they're using this culture mapping technique, kind of like how we're put together, to analyze patterns and signals across society and try to predict upcoming shifts.
It's quite remarkable. The report delves into the concept of a semiotic matrix. It's a sophisticated way of measuring how language itself evolves. And what they're doing is they're looking at emerging subcultures and belief systems, trying to identify the narratives that are gaining traction and really driving these trends.
So before we jump into the trends themselves, can we unpack a little bit about this culture mapping process? I mean, it sounds really complex.
Well, it's multifaceted, that's for sure. It analyzes data across social, economic, and technological dimensions, really trying to get a holistic picture. I guess you could think of it as a powerful AI, sifting through this massive amount of data, looking for connections, the patterns that humans might miss. And a key part of that, as I said, is the semiotic matrix. It really decodes the underlying meanings and ideologies that are embedded in language.
Okay, so it's like mapping the collective consciousness, kind of figuring out where we're headed as a society.
Yeah, precisely. And one of the first trends they've identified is what they're calling this rich reset culture. Basically, they're seeing this growing desire for career breaks and micro-retirements, people craving more balance, more personal fulfillment, and really departing from these traditional career paths.
Yeah, and this definitely aligns with a lot of the conversations that we're seeing culturally right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's this awareness of burnout. And everyone wants more meaningful work-life integration, but the report also flags a critical issue, right? And these are the systemic inequities. They point out that only 27% of U.S. workers even have access to paid family leave.
Absolutely. And the report really emphasizes that this idea of taking a reset, unfortunately, it's a privilege that many people simply can't afford. And it begs the question, is this trend towards career breaks and sabbaticals really just a luxury for the wealthy?
Yeah. And then what does that mean for the majority of people out there who are just trying to, make ends meet, let alone thinking about taking time off for, personal growth or exploration. Yeah. And the report actually delves into this tension a little bit by highlighting two kind of clashing subcultures.
Mm-hmm.
And they call them wellness minimalists and financial independence advocates.
Yeah, those are interesting terms. So the wellness minimalists, these are people who are really prioritizing experiences over material possessions. They're saving diligently for these sabbaticals and extended travel, seeing those breaks as investments in their well-being and their personal growth. Whereas the financial independence advocates, they're focused on these aggressive investment strategies so that they can achieve financial freedom and early retirement. They just want to escape that traditional 9-to-5 grind as quickly as possible, regardless of whether they're happy in their jobs or not.
So you have these two subcultures that are both seeking a reset, but they have pretty different approaches and motivations.
Mm-hmm.
One's really driven by that desire for personal fulfillment, and the other's more focused on financial independence as a means to escape a system that they just see as broken.
Yeah, and the report actually suggests that this tension, this could lead to what they call a workforce backlash, as employers are trying to figure out how to handle these demands for increased flexibility and this potential disruption to these traditional work models. It's definitely a vulnerability that we have to think about if this trend is going to be inclusive and accessible to a wider range of people.
Okay, let's move on to the next trend. Paradoxical populism. And this is where it gets kind of interesting because we're seeing these wealthy figures, a lot of them from the tech industry, positioning themselves as anti-elite leaders. And they're tapping into this growing distrust of these traditional institutions.
It is a paradox. I mean, on one hand, they're these champions of disruption and innovation, but they also represent a concentration of wealth and power. The report raises concerns about this concentration of power, whether these leaders will prioritize their own interests or the interests of those they claim to represent.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think about the accountability, and whether these populist innovation zones that they're proposing,
mm-hmm.
if those will truly benefit these communities or if it's just going to reinforce the existing power imbalances under this new guise. The report highlights two contrasting subcultures here. We have techno-populist communities and corporate critic groups.
It's a real clash of ideologies. So the techno-populists, these tend to be your younger, tech-savvy individuals. They embrace these wealth-backed leaders as disruptors, as visionaries. They really believe that technology and innovation hold the keys to solving these societal problems. And then you have the corporate critic groups who are much more wary of this wealth-backed populism. They see it as a form of elite capture that's kind of disguised as grassroots activism, and they're advocating for greater transparency, accountability, and more equitable distribution of power.
And the report suggests that the success of these populist innovation zones, it really hinges on whether they can bridge this divide and address the concerns of those who are a little bit skeptical about their motives and their potential impact. And the lack of transparency and accountability, that's a pretty clear vulnerability.
Absolutely. If these zones are perceived as just benefiting the wealthy elite at the expense of the broader community, they're going to face resistance and probably fail to achieve their stated goals.
Okay, let's dive into the next trend. Inclusion counter-reformation. This is exploring the complexities of diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI initiatives. So these are intended to promote fairness and equality, but they face pushback, leading to this potential for counter-reformation.
And what's interesting here is the report acknowledges that DEI initiatives, they haven't always been effective. You know, there's been a lot of focus on superficial metrics and performative measures rather than addressing the root causes of systemic inequities.
And the report kind of highlights this tension between two key players here. You have anti-woke activists who view these DEI efforts as divisive and unnecessary. And then you have employee resource groups, the ERGs, who are fighting for authentic inclusivity and systemic change.
It's a delicate balance. So the anti-woke movement argues that DEI initiatives are actually creating reverse discrimination, that it undermines meritocracy. And they often point to examples of what they perceive as woke culture, you know, going too far, leading to censorship, you know, stifling free speech.
And then on the other side, you have the ERGs, which are often composed of employees from these marginalized groups. And they argue that the DEI efforts are essential for creating a more equitable and inclusive workplace. They point to persistent inequalities in hiring, promotion, and pay as evidence that these systemic barriers still exist.
And the report suggests that this tension that we're seeing is creating a space for a counter-reformation, a chance to strengthen and refine DEI efforts to make them more effective in tackling this systemic bias and hopefully creating lasting change.
So the report is really emphasizing the vulnerability of relying on superficial metrics, like the number of women or people of color in leadership positions, without addressing the underlying cultural and systemic barriers that prevent true equity.
Exactly. You know, they cite a statistic, white men make up only 30% of the U.S. population, yet they hold a disproportionate amount of power across various sectors. So just increasing representation without addressing these power dynamics, it's unlikely to lead to meaningful change.
So it's a big question. Can DEI programs create that lasting change, or are they going to become casualties of these culture wars? The report argues that the key is moving beyond these performative measures and focusing on dismantling the systems that perpetuate this inequity.
They suggest that things like global fairness standards, employee-led initiatives, and a real shift towards data-driven approaches can help ensure that these DEI efforts are more than just lip service.
Okay, let's move on to Beyond the Lone Wolf. And the report here challenges the traditional narrative that extremist violence is just the act of these isolated individuals.
Yeah, they emphasize that extremism is increasingly a networked issue. It's fueled by online radicalization, socioeconomic disparities, and even toxic cultural norms. And this lone wolf myth, it often obscures these systemic factors, making it harder to really address the problem effectively.
Yeah, and the report really underscores the role of online echo chambers in fostering those extremist ideologies. It highlights a subculture of what they call digital extremists, who find refuge and reinforcement in these online communities. They're often shielded from these opposing viewpoints.
And those online spaces can provide a sense of belonging, even purpose, for individuals who feel alienated or disenfranchised in the offline world. They offer a platform for the dissemination of extremist propaganda and the recruitment of new members.
But the report also identifies a counter trend, and that's the masculinity reformers. This subculture is advocating for healthier male identities and emotional intelligence, challenging those traditional notions of masculinity that often contribute to violence and extremism.
They're pushing back against that idea that men should suppress their emotions and resort to aggression to solve problems. They're advocating for open communication, vulnerability, and a more nuanced understanding of what it means to be a man.
And the report suggests that one of the key vulnerabilities in addressing extremism is this potential for fragmented efforts. Law enforcement agencies, mental health professionals, community organizations, they often work in silos, lacking a cohesive approach.
And the report is really calling for a more integrated strategy, something that combines those law enforcement efforts to disrupt extremist networks with community-based initiatives. And those should be aimed at preventing radicalization and supporting those who have been affected by extremism.
Yeah, they point to this statistic that 85% of domestic terrorism acts in the U.S. are actually linked to ideological networks. That really underscores the importance of moving beyond those simplistic narratives and acknowledging that complex web of factors that are contributing to extremism.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that we need to address those underlying issues, you know, like inequality and social isolation that make individuals vulnerable to radicalization in the first place.
Okay. The final trend that we're going to explore in this section is aging invisibility. And this is a poignant one because it really highlights the increasing marginalization of older populations in a world that's obsessed with youth and productivity.
It's driven by several factors: depopulation, ageism, urban planning that often overlooks the needs of these aging individuals.
Yeah, and the report explores this tension between two distinct subcultures: the longevity enthusiasts, who are really focused on extending lifespans through these technological advancements, and then you have age-positive advocates, who are embracing aging as this natural process and a source of wisdom and resilience.
Yeah, you've got these two very different perspectives. The longevity enthusiasts, they believe that aging is a disease that can be cured or at least significantly delayed through technological interventions. Gene editing, biohacking, artificial intelligence, they view death as the enemy to be conquered. They're willing to invest significant resources in pursuing longevity.
And then the age-positive advocates, they're pushing back on that societal obsession with youth and beauty. They believe that aging is natural, a valuable part of life, and that older adults have a lot to offer society in terms of experience, wisdom, and perspective.
And one of the key vulnerabilities the report highlights here is this privatization of care. As elder care becomes increasingly privatized, access to quality care becomes much more dependent on financial resources, further marginalizing these lower-income older adults.
It creates a system where those with means can afford to age comfortably, while those without are left to navigate a system that's often inadequate and inaccessible.
Yeah. The report also raises concerns about this over-reliance on technology in the context of aging. While technology can play a role in supporting older adults, it's important to make sure it doesn't lead to isolation, dependence, or loss of autonomy.
It's like we're risking creating a future where older adults are overly reliant on technology or subject to constant surveillance, further eroding their privacy and independence.
Yeah, technology should be a tool for empowerment, not a means of control or marginalization.
That's an important thing to remember as we navigate the complexities of an aging society. Now let's move on to some of the other key themes that are shaping 2025 that are highlighted in the report. These themes, while not explored in as much depth as those five, they offer a glimpse into some of the other forces that are likely to shape the near future.
One of those themes is deepfake normalization. As deepfake technology becomes more sophisticated and accessible, it's eroding our ability to distinguish between what's real and what's fabricated.
And this obviously raises some serious concerns about trust and misinformation. I mean, if we can no longer rely on visual evidence, how do we determine the authenticity of information?
The report highlights the challenge this poses for journalists, law enforcement, even just individuals who are trying to navigate this world where visual truth is increasingly malleable.
Yeah, it is a little unsettling to think about. You know, we're already grappling with this misinformation and disinformation online, and deepfakes just add another layer of complexity to an already challenging landscape.
And the report does offer some hope, though. You know, researchers are working on more sophisticated deepfake detection systems, but it's a constant race against those who are developing the technology.
So it sounds like a technological arms race where the stakes are getting higher all the time.
Indeed. And as deepfakes become more commonplace, we'll need to develop new strategies for verifying information and discerning truth from falsehood.
The next theme is smart, dumb, hybrid cities. It seems like cities are trying to find that balance between integrating high-tech solutions for efficiency and resilience, and then also preserving individual choice and addressing these privacy concerns.
It's a delicate balancing act. On the one hand, smart city technologies have the potential to improve urban living in a lot of ways, you know, optimizing traffic flow, enhancing public safety. But then you have those concerns about surveillance, data privacy, and the potential for these technologies to actually worsen those existing inequalities.
Yeah. The report highlights the importance of citizen engagement in shaping the development and the implementation of these smart city technologies, you know, making sure that they're designed and deployed in a way that benefits all residents, not just a select few.
They give the example of San Diego, which faced a lawsuit over its surveillance system. And this really highlights those tensions that can arise when smart city technologies are implemented without sufficient transparency and public input.
It's a reminder that technological advancements should always be accompanied by those ethical considerations. and, you know, a real commitment to protecting those individual rights and freedoms.
Exactly. Technology should serve humanity, not the other way around.
Solo society is another theme that's gaining traction. The report notes that solo living is becoming more normalized. People are prioritizing autonomy, redefining those traditional relationships.
Yeah, this trend is driven by a bunch of factors. Changing social norms, economic pressures, and that desire for greater personal freedom.
And what's interesting is that this trend isn't necessarily about loneliness or isolation. A lot of people who choose to live alone are very social. They're connected. They just value that independence and the ability to live life on their own terms.
And the report highlights the impact this is having on various industries: housing, urban planning, travel, and entertainment.
Yeah, they even mentioned the solo travel boom, with destinations like Iceland and Japan becoming really popular among solo travelers. It's clear this trend is really reshaping how we live, work, and interact with the world.
Absolutely. And it's likely to have far-reaching implications for the future of society.
The next theme is intergenerational animus. And this is exploring the growing divide between different generations. You know, it seems like those clashing attitudes towards technology, social values, and work-life balance are fueling this animosity.
Yeah, it's complex. And it has these historical roots. Each generation comes of age with a particular set of social, economic, and technological contexts that really shapes their worldview. And these differences can lead to misunderstandings and conflict, especially when you combine that with stereotypes and generalizations.
And the report cautions against oversimplifying these generational divides. There's a lot of diversity within each generation. So lumping everyone together based on their age, it can lead to inaccurate and unhelpful conclusions.
For example, Gen Z is often portrayed as this uniformly progressive generation. But the report actually points out that there's this growing segment within Gen Z that favors tradition and stability over rapid social change.
Yeah, it's a reminder that generational labels are just that. They're labels. They don't really capture the full complexity of individual experiences and beliefs.
And it's important to engage in conversations that acknowledge these complexities rather than resorting to stereotypes.
Okay. And the final theme that's highlighted in the report is gendered workspaces. And despite the decades of progress toward gender equality, this report suggests that these traditional gender roles are actually being reinforced in a lot of workplaces.
Yeah. And this regression is partly attributed to the pandemic, how it impacted work arrangements. As companies transitioned to remote work, women often shouldered a disproportionate share of those childcare and household responsibilities. So it led to some setbacks in their careers.
The report also points to the fact that these systemic barriers still exist. Unconscious bias, lack of access to mentorship and sponsorship opportunities, the persistent gender pay gap, all of these things continue to hinder women's career advancement.
These factors create a very challenging environment for women in the workplace, often forcing them to make those really tough choices between their careers and their families.
And they have a statistic here. Women make up over half of the banking workforce, but they only hold 23% of the executive roles. Clearly, we still have a long way to go to achieve true gender parity in the workplace.
It's a reminder that progress is not always linear. We have to remain vigilant in addressing those systemic inequities that perpetuate gender disparities.
So we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. We explored five major trends in detail: rich reset culture, paradoxical populism, inclusion counter-reformation, beyond the lone wolf, and aging invisibility. And then we touched upon five additional themes: deepfake normalization, smart dumb hybrid cities, solo society, intergenerational animus, and gendered workspaces.
And all of these trends together, they paint a very complex and multifaceted picture of the forces that are shaping our world.
Yeah, they highlight both the opportunities and the challenges that we face as we navigate this increasingly interconnected and rapidly changing world.
Yeah.
It's a lot to take in. But I think the report does a really good job of not just presenting these trends, but also giving us a framework for how to think about them.
Yeah, and they emphasize how interconnected they are. They aren't isolated phenomena. They're really symptoms of these larger societal shifts and anxieties.
The report highlights several key vulnerabilities that we need to address if we really want to create a more equitable, sustainable future. Things like systemic inequities, the concentration of power, erosion of trust, the potential for technology to be used for control rather than empowerment.
And it also underscores how important it is to understand and navigate these subculture tensions that are driving these trends. They really reflect the diverse values, beliefs, and experiences of different groups within society.
And it's clear that there's no one-size-fits-all solution to these complex challenges. But the report does offer some pathways forward.
Yeah, they emphasize a greater need for transparency and accountability and inclusivity in decision-making. And it calls for a more holistic approach to problem-solving, one that considers the interconnectedness of social, economic, and technological systems.
And maybe most importantly, it highlights the need for informed, engaged citizens who are willing to question assumptions, challenge the status quo, and work together to create a better future.
It's a call to action. An invitation to engage with these trends, to think critically about the world we're creating, and take responsibility for shaping the future that we want to see.
As we move further into 2025 and beyond, it'll be really interesting to see how these trends evolve, which ones will gain momentum, which ones will kind of fade into the background, and what new trends will emerge.
Well, the future isn't predetermined. It's something we're actively creating through our choices and our actions.
So what stood out to you most from this deep dive? Was there a particular trend or insight that resonated with you personally?
For me, it was the emphasis on the interconnectedness of these trends and the need for these systemic solutions. You know, it's a reminder that we can't solve these challenges in isolation. We need to really address those root causes, not just the symptoms.
Yeah, I was really struck by the role of subculture tensions in shaping these trends. It's fascinating how different groups are responding to the same forces in such diverse ways. And it highlights how important it is to understand, to respect different perspectives, even when we disagree.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to encourage our listeners to reflect on these trends. Consider how they might be playing out in their own lives, in their communities.
What choices can we make as individuals, as a society, to navigate these complexities in a way that benefits everyone?
And just remember, the future isn't something that happens to us. It's something that we create.
Until next time, keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep diving deep.